In addition to cutting all the power in the house, R2 had fused the comlinks. Chewbacca had to venture forth into the steamy fog of the night to bring Jevax a report of what had taken place.
"I don't understand it," the old Mluki said, once he arrived at the house.
He looked from the ruin of fried bedding to the charred, motionless droid upon whom Han was grimly affixing a restraining bolt.
"The pump stations and the mechanical feeders, yes. Most of our equipment is second-hand, and, quite frankly, pretty old. But your R2 unit..."
"Wait a minute," Leia said. "Are you telling me programming failures like this are common?"
"Not common."
The Maluki's eyes met hers frankly under the heavy ridge of brow.
"But every now and then a tree feeder will go mildly amok and wander through the streets squirting nutrients at passers-by. Or one of the ice walkers will start hiking away across the glaciers, forcing its passengers to bail out and walk back to the valley."
He spread his white furred hands.
"Personally, I suspect it's the result of doming the valley. They've never reported mechanical problems like this in the neighboring rifts."
"But it's not a mechanical problem," argued Leia. "It's a programming fault."
"Well, that's what the mechanics here say."
Jevax scratched his head.
"But the programmers swear it's mechanical."
Late the following morning, Leia sat on the terrace watching Chewbacca poke around in R2-D2's mechanical innards in a hissing sizzle of sparks. Chewbacca hadn't found any kind of relay mechanism inserted into R2's motivators which would have given him instructions from the outside. And in any case, when would such a thing have been installed? He hadn't been out of Leia's sight for more than a few moments when he veered off the path. Something moved in the orchard below. A ghost-like movement faded at once into the mist, but there was no mistaking the white gown, the night-black tail of hair. Leia swung herself over the balcony rail and dropped lightly to the thick ferns below. "I'll be back." In the mist, it was impossible to see more than a few meters, clearly. Half closing her eyes, Leia reached out with her senses, as Luke had been teaching her to do, and picked up the subliminal stir of fabric among leaves, the squish of wet foliage underfoot. Not swiftly, but steadily, she worked to keep up with the woman whose face she'd seen under the lamplight of the path last night. She remembered now where she'd seen her before. She'd been 18, newly elected as junior representative of Alderaan in the Imperial Senate at Coruscant. Her father had presented her to the Emperor in the Senate Rotunda, and that night her aunts had insisted on taking her to the levee at the palace. Leia had noticed half a dozen women of truly startling beauty, exquisitely gowned and jeweled. That was where she'd seen this woman, this girl. She'd been sitting among the Emperor's concubines. Leia caught up with her in an alley near the market square. She was still slender and small, almost childlike, as she had been 11 years ago. Her exquisite oval face was unlined, her slanted black eyes unmarred by wrinkles.
"Roganda,"
Leia said. Roganda Ismarin stepped forward and sank into a deep curtsy.
"Your Highness, I beg of you, don't betray me."
"To whom?" asked Leia practically and gestured for her to rise.
"Them."
Roganda nodded toward the bustling noises of the market, half invisible in the fog, and her gesture took in the stone foundations of the houses around them.
"Anyone in this town. The Empire laid it to the ground not too long ago, and people have cause to hate even the unwilling servants of the Emperor. Don't force me to seek another home."
"No," said Leia, embarrassed.
"Of course not.
Why did you pick this place to come?"
"It was out of the way. No one would look for me here."
She gave a shy smile.
"Since you've come this far, will you come to my rooms?"
Roganda gestured back along the alley.
"They aren't elegant. You can't pay for much elegance on a fruit picker's wages. But I do pride myself on my coffee."
"Another time. What were you doing outside the house?"
"Waiting for you. I recognized you last night when your droid malfunctioned, and I began to fear you had recognized me. I made up my mind to come to you in private, to beg for your silence."
Roganda looked down at her hands, turning her topaz ring.
"Sometimes it seems I'll never cease being afraid. that I'll have nightmares about him for as long as I live.
It's all right. Leia's voice sounded gruff and awkward in her own ears, shaky with the memory of her own nightmares. I promise I won't betray you to those who live here.
Thank you.
Then Leia remembered something.
Roganda, didn't you have a son?
Roganda looked quickly away. Her voice was almost inaudible under the musical chatter of the market.
He died.
As Leia walked back across the market square, she saw suddenly the topaz ring on Roganda's hand. A hand completely innocent of either bandages, small cuts, or purple stains.
You can't pay for much elegance on a fruit picker's wages.
Fruit pickers usually sported bandages on their fingers, which bore the stains of the fruit they harvested. She found herself wondering what would have happened to her if she'd gone with Roganda to her rooms for coffee.
Who are you? Luke typed. The words glowed in amber silence in the almost darkness of the quartermaster's office on deck 12. 3PO had tried to tap into the will on this terminal and reported that although power still functioned in some of its circuits, cable-greedy Jawas had torn out the computer connection somewhere up the trunk line. Perhaps, thought Luke, that was one reason he felt instinctively safe here. Who are you? Luke typed. The name swam up out of the depth, whole, not letter by letter, as if it had existed there for a long time. Callista. His breath paused. He hadn't actually thought this would work. Then he saw, she's all right. They haven't harmed her. Not beyond what she'd take in a rough training session. Thank you, typed Luke. They're on deck 19, in the starboard maintenance hangar. Can you get me up there? I can take you to the cargo lift shaft they're using as a communications tunnel. They've got it booby-trapped and guarded. Can you levitate?
Yes, I've been...
You don't have to keyboard, you know. Internal surveillance had the ship wired. Your voice is picked up by the system.
I've been using Perrigan for my legs, said Luke, still looking at the screen, as if it were a wall or a blacked-out window behind which she dwelt. It's beginning to interfere a little with my concentration, but I can manage.
The droid with her, the droid with the living eyes. Is this a new sort of creature Palpatine thinks he can use?
Palpatine's dead. A new republic has been established and is growing strong.
The screen wiped dark for a moment. Then, flashing across it, a growing design, a dancing spiral of outflung joy. If she had been here, he knew she would have flung herself into his arms.
Your Master Luke? Is Calrissian your real name?
Skywalker, he said. Luke Skywalker.
What happened to this vessel, this mission? What started it again? How long do we have?
How long we have, I don't know. I am side by side with the Will. But there are things of the Will which I cannot touch. 30 years I have existed so. I managed to cripple the receptors and damaged or destroyed most of the slaved auto-activation relays that would have triggered the computer's core from a distance. But there still remained the danger the station could have been activated manually. That's why I stayed.
Then I was right. Luke felt his hair prickle. I knew it. Those guns weren't fired by a mechanical.
I was sure you were the Empire's agent. Before you came on board, there was no one. Nor is there anyone on board save yourself and the aliens the landers brought in after the Will was activated again.
I don't understand, said Luke.
If no one came on until the Will was activated, it was the Force. The broken activation relays were set off by the use of the Force.
That's impossible. The Force can't affect droids and mechanicals.
I know. Deck 6 was utterly dark. The dead air stank of Jawas. Everywhere Luke saw torn-out panels, looted wiring. This section of the deck was dead to the will. No wonder Callista had directed him to come here after he hooked up with 3PO. Cray. Callista would help rescue Cray, and Cray would know how to cope with the will, know how to disable the artificial intelligence that ruled this metal microcosm. "I exist side by side with the will," Callista had said. He could communicate with her through the system only. She had died in the computer core. Luke had seen how the spirit of the Jedi could detach itself from the physical body, could imbue itself in other things, as Exar Kun's had imbued the stones of Yavin 4. Knowing the Empire might very well send an agent to trigger the eye manually, she had stayed in the gunnery computers for 30 years, guarding the entry to the machine that had taken her life, a fading ghost keeping watch on a forgotten battlefield. "Come on, 3PO. He bent to retrieve a hank of cable from the corpse of a gutted MSE. "Let's find ourselves a terminal." "Where I come from, on Shad," Callista said, the letters fading in slowly as a single paragraph, as if rising from the depths of her recollection. "If our Ark was in Wisto territory, and Wisto hunt most of the deep oceans where our ranch was, and we had to make a hull repair or go out to the herd to help in off-season calving, we'd send out something called a foo twitter, a floater that made some kind of hooting or tweeting. Since Wisto are frantically territorial, they'd all head for the thing, which by then would be kilometers from the Ark, and that would give Papa or me or Uncle Klain a chance to do what we had to do in open water and get back to safety. Would the Klags respond to a foo twitter? They seem pretty territorial to me."
"If it sounded like Ugbuzz and the Gakfeds, they would," Luke said.
A schematic appeared on the screen, a sketch of the section of Deck 17. A bright circle flashed around a gangway. Then a window appeared in the screen. "The gangway's wired. It leads from recycling, the area of the ship where only the droids go, to Deck 19, where they're keeping Cray. If you make your foo twitter light enough, you should be able to propel it up fast while you keep the inclusion grid misfiring enough to let it through without too many hits." Luke thought about it. "That's how you did it? Caused the grid to misfire?"
"The more that hits you, the more that will. But if you take a rotor from one of the game systems in the lounge and case it in a gutted tracker droid, you can shoot it up the shaft fast enough to survive a few hits."
She'd climbed the shaft from the gunroom, knowing she'd be hit. Knowing the first hit would break her concentration on the Force, damage her ability to keep the grid from firing, lessen her chances to avoid the second. And the second hit would lessen her chances to avoid the third.
Very softly, he said, "I wish it hadn't happened."
"You know," said Luke, angling a palm-sized diagnostic mirror to see the delicate fastenings of the voter box as he hooked it to the tracker droid's gutted casing, "if somebody had offered me odds on which group of my fellow guests on this little tour had taken the rooms next to the transport shuttles, I'd have bet my boots and lightsaber on it being the Sand People."
Callista replied, "It's something even the Masters don't reveal about the inner nature of the universe." She made a whisper by reducing the letters to the tiniest readable specks. "The universe has a sense of humor." And he felt her rare laughter like a shimmering of the dark air. As he worked, he talked, and hesitantly, a sentence or two at a time, on the tiny monitor screen or the larger diagnostic, whichever he'd been nearer at the time, Callista had been drawn out to speak about growing up on the ranch on Shad, about the father who'd never understood her power in the Force, and the stepmother who'd been too baffled and unhappy herself to comprehend either of them, about the moons and tides, ice and phosphorus, and the singing of the Syeen, the great animals who lived far out in the deeps, about Jyn Alkis, the Jedi master who'd come to Chad and had been her teacher. Finally, Luke leaned back and flicked the remote. A harsh, guttural voice, 3PO's mimicry of a Gamorrean, boomed,
"Very well, men. Fan out and remain quiet. We are going to massacre those smelly Klag rebel saboteurs."
My, what a grammatical stormtrooper, commented Callista.
Luke grinned as he hooked up the cable. 3PO, edit that to, okay, man, fan out and keep quiet. We're gonna kill them stinking clag rebel saboteurs.
You forgot to say sir.
Luke started to elbow her in the arm as he did when Leia made a smart mouth remark, but stopped. He couldn't. Her arms were dust and bone on the gun deck floor.
You're not taking him with you, are you?
Han asked as Leia crossed the living room to touch R2's domed top. Leia was on her way back to the Muna Center. Her most recent search through the archives had revealed that in recent years there had been a growing number of unexplained droid malfunctions. She wanted to investigate further, and as a matter of course, she planned to take R2.
Whatever his problem was last night, we don't know if we've solved it yet.
Han was checking his blaster as he spoke, in spite of the fact that he'd tested and retested it not half an hour before. Han and Chewbacca were on their way to find a man named Bran Kempel. Sources said he was the local boss among the smugglers these days, and Han wanted to find out if he knew anything about the secret tunnels. When Han and Chewbacca had disappeared into the fog, Leia walked over to the little astromech droid.
R2?
The droid's wretched whistle begged for understanding.
Did someone tell you to do it?
His cap swung wildly and he rocked a little on his base. Trust your feelings, Luke had said to her many times. R2 had tried to kill her and Han not 12 hours ago. Han would choke. But then she thought her love for Han was the greatest triumph she'd ever seen of looks wrong, feels right. So he didn't have any room to talk. She fetched a bolt extractor from Chewbacca's toolkit in the next room and removed the restraining bolt from R2's casing.
Let's go.
As Leia walked, she suddenly remembered what Nikos had said when Luke probed his memory. The older kids, Lagan Ismarin and Hodis Umgo. Lagan Ismarin.
Roganda Ismarin's brother? That meant that Roganda Ismarin, Palpatine's concubine and member in good standing of his court, had come from the blood and the heritage of the Jedi Knights. Anger flushed through Leia. It had all been an act, all of it, down to the sweet, frightened tones of her voice, an act calculated to play on her pity. But as she crossed through the small square at the head of Roganda's narrow street, she saw something that hit her in the pit of the stomach like a club. Emerging from between the dark foundations were Lord Drost Elegin and Dr. Oron Keldor. Elegin was head of House Elegin, one of the elite old households. He'd been one of the most notorious playboys of the Emperor's court, in and out of the court gazette for scandals of gambling, dueling, amorous affairs. Oron Keldor had been a designer of the Death Star. So, there was more here, far more than just a woman hiding out. She crossed the narrow street, R2 trundling behind, followed the sound of the feet, the sense of their presence cutting ahead through the alley. Fog cloaked the two men as they took the paths that led through the orchards, where the rushing of water and the faint click and whir of the tree feeders covered R2's soft, steady rumble. The ground began to rise in a long, gradual ramp. They were going to the lift shaft that led to the hangars, from which vehicles could be taken out onto the ice.
It seems a long way to go around, she heard Drost Elegin say, if the tunnels connect with this smuggler pad.
There are fewer people who know the way in from here, the better. Even you, my lord, she heard Keldor say. And at this point, with Organa showing up as she has, we don't know who may be watching.
Leia and R2 climbed to a small curved bunker of quick-set concrete molded into the cliff itself. She listened through the sturdy glass door until the lift pinged on arrival and the men's words were cut off, presumably by its doors. Leia still counted out 2 minutes before inserting her card. She summoned the lift herself and keyed in the hangar, the only possible destination. When Leia and R2 stepped off the lift at the hangar, Elegin and Keldor were just climbing into the smallest of the available icewalkers. As soon as the hangar doors had shut behind it, Leia found a T-suit that fit her and chose another icewalker, a very old Mobquit crawler with a low profile and a small engine, which would probably fail to register on a detector if Keldor was watching his trail. You set back there? Leia called to R2. Leia keyed in homing coordinates, glanced back to make sure R2 had hooked himself into the guidance computer, and started out across the frozen landscape in the Ice Walker's distant wake. Ice spattered on the triplex of the crawler's bubble, wind rocking the low-slung vehicle like the paw of a huge pitten batting at a slow-moving slug bug. Leia followed the bobbing pattern of yellow lights that marked the Ice Walker's gawky arachnoid limbs. Out in the sooty maelstrom, another light glowed briefly blue. It blinked away almost instantly, but Leia saw the moving tangle of the walker's leg markers turn in that direction. The wind nearly took her off her feet when she climbed out of the crawler in the lee of the scoured black rocks that sheltered the smuggler's pad. It wasn't a pad anymore, where a sort of bunker had been, precast permacrete designed for a little more than an inconspicuous staging point thermoblasted into the glacier. Leia saw the low black walls of what the military referred to as a permanent temporary hangar. The old permacrete bunker had been added to by others, mostly permtemps whose black walls blended with the rock of the ridge against which they backed. The Ice Walker was gone. Leia stepped into one of the smaller sheds. There was a ship in the hangar, a Maekoon Tikiar model, sleek and dark inside. Focusing through the force, she sensed that the crew was watching a smashball game illegally on the subspace net. Reassured, Leia surveyed the annex room behind her. It was filled with packing crates blazoned with corporation logos and serial numbers. Maekoon-made demp guns and heavy laser carbines. Sinar ion cannons, scale 50 power cells sized for the smaller older TIEs and blast boats. Smaller cells by the dozen, blaster size. Ulran Keldor, last of the Emperor's fleet designers. Designing something new? She shook her head. Her instincts whispered, no, something bigger. Something else. Something they'd assassinated Stinner Dresinja Shah over, lest she hear something that would ring familiar from her own studies and notify the New Republic of their danger. Leia had to cling to the droid for support as they struggled back to the crawler, picked up the trail of the walker's huge grippers across the ice. The black rock outcroppings of the main ridge formed a wind trap east of the hangar itself. No one, thought Leia, would have been able to track the site of the tunnel from the air. The pale sun's light barely penetrated the clouds, and only faint scuffs remained of the walker's tracks. She only saw the cave where they left the craft and the permacrete pillbox that covered the shaft head itself because of the puckery masses of dimples fast fading in the blowing snow. Five sets of tracks marked the powdered snow that lay all over the cement floor of the pillbox, ending at the doors of the lift. Four humans, and the broad, short, slightly rounded prints of what might have been a Sulistan or a Rodian. R2, she said softly, I want to see how this tunnel links up with the smuggler tunnels under Plawal itself. But if we get into any trouble, your default command is to head back to the crawler and get Han. While she spoke, she broke the seals on a crate and helped herself to a force pike. They walked for some time, Leia feeling in the force for the people who led her on. She sensed the swift scramble of claws, the snuffling pant of animal breath, even before R2 whistled his nearly soundless warning. R2 barely had time to brighten all his panel lights when the things were on them. Rodian, human, and two Maluki, or what had been those species once. With the force pike, she slashed a Maluki halfway through the neck and swung immediately to the Rodian, whose broken metal club gashed open her sleeve and the flesh of her arm. They had hardly fallen when the Kretch appeared, slithering out of the darkness to feed on the corpses and the blood. Leia fled down the tunnel, R2's beam flashing ahead of her. She ducked through hewn chambers, ramps of desiccated and Kretch-gnawed wood covering steps and changes of level. A bridge crossed a fast-running stream whose water steamed thinly in the hot air. Refuge. She sensed it, felt a curious likeness. It lay to her left through a dark triple arch. Passing through, she discovered an open hall with stalactites and thin curtains of mineral deposit forming through cracks in the roof. A stream divided the wide room in two, planks thrown across it. Distantly, as R2 shined his spotlight into the room beyond the center arch, Leia felt as if she saw and heard things not of her own time. Children's voices. The bone-deep awareness of the presence of the Force. She stepped through the arch. Chips and threads of metal winked at her all the length of the long barrel-vaulted room. A glass tank a few centimeters thick, empty save for a thin layer of yellow sand. On the table lay a ball of black volcanic glass, a gold ring, and a crude doll wrought of rag and twigs. The children were here, thought Leia. She'd found their toys. By the doorway, R2 whistled a warning. The air seemed to thicken, sinking in on itself. The Force. An enormous darkness, masquerading as silence. Then from the darkness, she heard a faint chitinous scratching. Let's get out of here, R2. The floor moved. The glistening shapes of Kretch moved over one another like a lake of black jewels. I wouldn't advise it, Your Highness. Roganda Ismarin, pale and fragile-looking in her white gown, stood framed in the narrow archway to Leia's right. Beside her stood a dark-clothed boy, like her, slim and raven-haired, with a suggestion of wiry grace. Oran Keldor, Drost Eligen, and another man, stocky, hard-faced, stood grouped behind.
R2, go! Ordered Leia. Now!
Roganda only gestured. Eligen and the third man strode to cut R2 off before he reached the plank bridge, and Leia brought up the force pike. Feeling the yank of the boy's mind on it, she resisted with her own. Eligen fired his blaster at her, but she was already moving in on him, driving him back. At Roganda's side, the boy said, "Don't waste your time, Eligen. Garinin, you..." He fixed his wide eyes on R2. "Back here, now!" R2, who had crossed the plank bridge and was a few meters from the arch leading away into the dark maze of passageways, came to a stop. Kretch crawled and squirmed wildly over his slick sides.
R2, go!
Leia shifted sideways, force pike raised, keeping a wary eye on Eligen and a man called Garinin. Surely not a member of House Garinin.
Oh, really, Leia? Said the boy impertinently. If I could make him almost blow up the house you were sleeping in, you don't think he's going to disobey me now?
R2, get out of here!
R2 wheeled in a tight circle and headed for the door.
Obey me, yelled the boy, pale face twisting.
Picture the schematic, began Roganda, and the boy turned on her like a wildcat. I know what I'm supposed to do. It worked before.
R2 vanished into the tunnels in a brown smear of mashed Kretch. The boy stared after him, panting with rage and disbelief. Leia vividly remembered Chewbacca amid a tangle of wire on the terrace, patching the droid back together.
Send the Kretch back, my lord, said Garinin.
Don't bother me,
screamed the boy, and strode to the bridge, shoving Garinin aside. He whipped a black-hilted lightsaber from his side.
Leia felt her breath choke off, had to fight with all her strength to draw past it.
The blade slashed at the force pike.
Erek!
Shouted Roganda. The Kretch had begun to swarm across the bridge. Leia felt the bitter grip on her windpipe relax, saw the swarming arthropods halt in the middle of the planks and begin to mill as if an invisible barrier prevented them from coming further.
Mother, she's doing something, cried Erek angrily. It isn't working. That droid should come back. That doddering old scumbag said... Erek, be silent.
Leia saw the look Roganda gave her son, and saw, too, the concubine's swift, wary glance at Garinin and Eligen. She's keeping something from them.
Lord Garinin, Lord Eligen, said Roganda in her sweet, reasonable voice,
that same sweet voice with just a touch of helpless deference that she had used to speak to Leia in the market.
Step back this way. We seem to be in a rather simple impasse. Erek, remember not to lose your temper and always take the easiest way out. Your Highness, right, said Erek, and he grinned. You put it down, Princess, or I'll let the Kretch come all the way across the bridge. Surrender your weapon, Your Highness. That's the only hope you have of coming out of this alive.
Very carefully, Luke leaned into the shaft of the inclusion grid.
Okay, pal,
he whispered to the food twitter.
Do your stuff.
It was like shouting a word, but there was no word. Only the silent explosion of the food twitter rocketing upward, ripping air as if fired from a slug thrower, and the spattering hiss of lightning.
few, spidery, too late, the blue bolts zapped and fizzled from the opal squares around the metal casing, sparking where one hit, two, and then the grid fell silent again. Luke checked the monitor on the trackball. The Foo Twitter was still transmitting. Shakily, he leaned his forehead on the panel, thanked the force and all the powers of the universe. He turned as two SPs and the biggest Treadwell he'd ever seen, a massively armored furnace stoker, loomed out of the hall's darkness, reaching for him with inexorable arms. The lightsaber whined to life in his hand as snaky silver tentacles caught his wrist from behind. He struck at one of the snake-eyed droids, the other jabbing at him with a long jointed rod, and the jolt of the electrical shock knocked him breathless. He flipped the lightsaber to his left hand. Something struck him from behind and lifted him bodily from the floor. The Treadwell's case-hardened arms resisted even the cut of the laser. It was made to work in the heart of an antimatter furnace, and though the lightsaber hissed and slashed, the violent blows only reverberated up Luke's arms as if they would shatter the bones. Arms dangling, eye stalks dangling, the droids followed the stoker as it bore Luke through a doorway to the mephitic stink of an enzyme chamber, the disposal where the cleanup droids dumped all the ship's garbage. The Treadwell let him drop. Relaxed, almost as if he could sleep, Luke summoned the Force as he fell, light and true, as if he drifted above the steam. Just beyond the far rim of the vat, he fell and hit the floor hard. He managed to crawl a considerable distance before he passed out. Callista, we can do it. The man's voice held a thin veneer of patience and confidence over a core of rough irritation. Luke recognized the hangar. The Y-wing stood where he'd seen it. Next to it stood a skip-ray blast boat, crowding the smaller craft. We got in, didn't we? The man's eyes were bright blue and a hatchet-jawed, amiable face, grubby with 3 days' rust-colored beard. He had a gold ring in one ear. The Force was with us, or we'd never have made it. It was the first time Luke had seen her clearly. But it was as if he'd always known that she was tall, slim, long-boned. She was beautiful. Luke had never seen a woman so beautiful. Geith, if there was any way for me to go up that shaft, you know what? By the flare in his eyes, Luke saw he'd read her words as an accusation of cowardice. And I'm telling you, neither of us has to do it, Callie. It's not going to take us that long to get clear of the nebula's interference and back to where we can signal for help. And at least let Plett know what's coming at him. As it is, if we try to be heroes and fail, they won't know zip until they catch a lap full of smoking plasma. They won't know if we make a run for it and get nailed, either. The station lays its defensive power in a double ellipse with one randomized turn. I've got it scoped, Callie. It'll be tougher in that tub than in the Y-wing, but it can be done.
She drew a deep breath, and he put a hand on her shoulder, a finger on her lips.
You don't have to be such a hero, baby. There's always ways of doing things without getting killed.
Luke saw the whole thing. He saw Geith piloting the blast boat as if it had been a tie, flipping through the white streaks of death shot out by the will with breathtaking speed. He was almost out of range when a random bolt holed his stabilizer. And it was over. Callista closed her eyes. Tears traced a line in the grime. She had the look of a woman who hadn't slept or eaten in days. Luke woke, or thought he woke, to utter blackness, and she was there, lying against his back. Gently, fearing that if he moved at all she'd flee, he turned and gathered her into his arms. For a long time she wept, silently and without apology, her hot tears soaking into his ragged jumpsuit, her body shaking. "You stayed," said Luke. Even as he spoke, understanding that he was dreaming, understanding that the warmth of her body was her memory of what it had been like. You used the last of your strength, the last of the Force, to put yourself into the gunnery computer to keep anyone else from taking the ship, for all you knew, forever. She said, "Luke," and he brought her face to his and kissed her lips.
Yeah.
The dancers, a boneless Twi'lek boy and a massively breasted Gamorrean female, undulated under the red glare of lights for the edification of half a dozen seedy customers. Bran Kemple sighed heavily.
Nublick this light. Now, there was a hustler who could run things.
Hans sipped his drink. Pretty lively, huh?
Lively? Shush! Half a dozen flights in a week that never made it on the port manifests. People appearing and disappearing through the tunnels out under the ice.
Kemple's curly brown hair was surrendering to its destiny, and he picked up a couple of extra chins in the years since Han had last seen him as a two-bit gunrunner in the Juvex systems. So what happened?
What happened?
Kemple blinked at him through the gloom.
He said the Emperor's hand was on the planet, that his life was in danger. I'm thinking he cleared out and ran.
Jub was convinced he'd gone down that well in the ruins looking for the stuff and never came out.
Han looked around at the new voice. It was one of the hustlers, a childlike Omwat, like a little blue fairy with eyes 1,000 years old. Kemple blew a thin cloud of steam.
Jub ran 2 or 3 scans down there. One for the slight and one for xylan and gold. Did the same from Miss Roganda's house on Painted Door Street, looking for a tunnel entrance there.
Roganda is Marin? Han felt the hair lift on the back of his neck.
Sure, said Kemple, turning his attention back to the dancers. Showed up 1 or 2 after the slight disappeared and said she'd made arrangements to rent his place. She seemed to know him.
The room where they put Leia was a large one, hewn out of rock. Leia noted that all the furniture was human-proportioned, the plumbing fitted for human requirements. The door latches clicked. She felt at the same moment a buzzing in her head, a heavy sleepiness. She shoved it off and retreated from the door as far as she could, knowing who would come in.
You're still awake,
Erek sounded surprised.
You're not the only one around here who can use the Force.
You call that using the Force?
He looked her up and down, contempt in his blue eyes. He was, she guessed, 14 or 15 years old. He turned and regarded a place on the rock of the wall slightly to the right of the bed. She felt the trained power of his will. Where there had been only the dark reddish stone, there was now a hole about 0.5 meter square. He took a black plastine pouch from the hole, and at his nod, the stone returned to the way it had been. Leia recognized it. It was like the yarak-coated pouches Tom Lael had taken from Drub's pocket.
My mother doesn't know as much as she thinks she does. She thinks I can't handle this, thinks I can't use the Force to turn it into another source of power.
After he left, it took Leia 15 sweating, aching minutes to open the hole in the wall once more. She sensed it had been built by a Jedi of vast power. There was a little cream-colored yarak powder spilled on the bottom. Erek, no doubt, had packets of the stuff hidden everywhere. There were other things in the compartment, bundles of flimsoplast notes, tiny skeins of wire, a couple of small soldering guns, a handful of xylan chips. Leia opened the notes, and at the bottom of the last page, a signature caught her eye. Nastra McGrody.
To this day, I don't know if Palpatine knew.
Leia read the words with a strange sense of pity for the man who had written them in this room, not all that many years ago. He had been told by one of the bully boys who followed Roganda Ismarin around that the Emperor had kidnapped his wife and daughter and would kill them if he refused to do as he was asked. Leia closed her eyes. All the reports she had received after the destruction of Alderaan and the demolition of the Death Star had assumed McGrody had disappeared willingly, probably into the Emperor's infamous think tank, in flight from retribution by the rebellion for what he had done. Roganda Ismarin told me it was all in the Emperor's name, the note read, but I never received one scrap of evidence that Palpatine was in any way involved. What they wanted was simple, they told me. My talents, unsuspected, I thought, by any, had led me to study the records of the old Jedi, to experiment with the mental effects attributable by them to the energy field referred to as the Force.
Talents? Thought Leia, startled. McGrody was Force-strong?
In any case, in my articles in the Journal of Energy Physics, I had reflected on the legend that the Jedi were unable to affect machinery or droids by means of the Force. I speculated about the possibility of an implanted sub-electronic converter to be surgically inserted in the brain of one who possessed such ability in the Force, to concentrate thought waves, enabling him or her, with proper training, to influence artificial intelligences of varying complexities at the individual synaptic level. This was what they wanted me to do.
Eric, thought Leia.
Had she planned it herself in her most malicious daydreams, Leia could have evolved no more wretched vengeance upon the man who had taught the Death Star's designers. Nastra Magrodi had been kept drugged with mild doses of antidepressant, just sufficient to rob him of any will to leave. The boy is now 13 years old, wrote Magrodi in his final paragraph. His control over droids and mechanicals increases daily. His use of the various artifacts of the Jedi his mother brings to him is ever more adept. I see well what I have created. Mon Mothma, my friend Bail, all those who tried to enlist my support and help against the rise of Palpatine's power, I can only beg for your understanding, for I know that what I have done is not something which can be forgiven. I will try to get these notes to you in some fashion. Should I not, I fear that all will believe the worst of me. To you I sign myself in all wretchedness, Nastra Magrodi.
Master Luke?
He had to wake up, cross back over to the conscious world from the peaceful subsurface darkness of dreams. The dreams had been so pleasant. Callista. What could be so important on the other side that he couldn't wait? He came to consciousness with a cry as if he'd been tipped into an acid bath of pain. Oh, what time is it?
It's 1300 hours, 37 minutes, sir.
3PO set the medikit down beside Luke and opened it.
Miss Callista informed me that you ran afoul of the ship's maintenance droids and gave me the coordinates to find you.
I wonder if the food twitter is still up there.
It's fine.
Her voice was in his head, but the words might have been audible because 3PO replied,
But Miss Callista, diversion or no diversion, Master Luke is scarcely up to taking on Gamorreans.
No, we've been going about this all wrong, said Luke. If the will can program droids to think I'm garbage that needs recycling, or can program Gamorreans to think Kray is a rebel saboteur, it's about time we went into the programming business ourselves. Torches were burning all around the Gak-Fed village when Luke limped through the wide doors of the storage hold and approached Ugbuzz. It's the will that you act like true boars, Luke said gently. In spite of the bruises all over one side of his unshaven face, his voice was that of a Jedi master. Only by being true boars can you be true stormtroopers. Luke added to Bulyak, I have heard that the Clags laugh at you for having a feeble tribe that won't fight, and call you Piglet Mommy. But the will has found a way for you to do your duty as fighting boars, and it is consonant with the intent of the will that you do this. As one, Ugbuzz and his men dashed into the big hut at the far end of the hold, Bulyak in high-volume pursuit. Luke found them clustered around the monitor screen. It is consonant with the intent of the will that you ascend to Deck 19 by means of Lift 21 and annihilate those stinking sons of cabbage pickers. They nearly trampled him barreling out the door. Luke was able to procure power cells from the Jawas. Followed by his sweatily odoriferous Gamorrean forces, Luke steered the antigrav sled that they would use to ascend to Deck 19 over to Lift 21. He glanced at the chronometer above the doors of the lift shaft. 1520. It was the work of only minutes to link the power cells in series and hook them to the sled's lifters. From above, Luke could hear, if he stretched his perceptions, the breaths and heartbeats of the guards at the upper levels of the shaft. 1525. As the Gak-Feds clustered impatiently around him, Luke took the Foo Twitter's trackball from his pocket. He pressed the activation toggle, and he reached out still further with his senses, listened to the hollow of the shaft, praying that the inclusion grid hadn't shorted the voter circuits.
Nikos.
Distant, echoing, reduced to a half-heard wailing breath, the cry still came to him, a hideous echo of terror, despair, fury. Luke's breath caught as he heard,
"Nikos, damn you, act like a man if you remember how."
Then he heard nothing. But after a moment, someone else said,
"Stinking tonscum catbeds are up here."
There was a rush of retreating feet. "Now!" Luke grated the power up on a slow curve as the ersatz Gamorrean stormtroopers piled into the sled. He was horribly aware of the dark drop of 80 meters or more beneath him. The sled sank a little under their weight, then held steady. Far off, if he stretched out his awareness, he could hear the clags cursing as they followed the drifting food twitter through silent halls and storerooms. Could almost hear Callista's laughter as she maneuvered the tracker ahead of them like a child pushing a balloon. Then Kray's voice again, bitterly cursing the man who could not help her as they dragged her through the halls toward her death. Luke shut his eyes and drew on the strength of the Force. Slowly, the sled and its burden began to rise. At the doorway to Deck 19, the Gamorreans leapt, piling on each other's shoulders to be the first ones out, squealing, cursing, waving axes and shoulder cannons. The sled rocked and heaved, but nobody fell. The chronometer on the wall read 1550.